This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Lee Chui Lin. The tooth fairy is supposed to leave us with a little reimbursement every time we lose a milk tooth in childhood. But what about when we lose our teeth in adulthood? Well, the replacement may actually be from our own bodies in the form of dental stem cells. Professor Koo Swan Pik, oral physician, gives us an update. Welcome to the show, Professor Koo.
Hi. Nice to be back here.
So, first things first, take us through the anatomy of a tooth. I mean, I think a lot of us think it's just this hard thing in our mouths, you know, without realizing that there's actually a lot more to it.
But that's true. I think a lot of people know we've got two sets of dentition. We've got milk teeth and then we've got adult's teeth. And we have basically have two, but we wish we have three. And then we will, or four or five, then we will have continuous regeneration. So basically, this is not the case. We've got teeth erupting in our mouths, and then after about 8, 9, 10, it begins to change into adult teeth. And if you don't keep it for long enough, and then it goes away. So when you talk about anatomy of the teeth, yes, it's true, they are those white pearly stuff in your mouth. They form when we were in our mother's womb, and then it erupts as we grow, even from the time we were born in 6 months down the road. And when it erupts, it becomes a fully formed organ in itself, meaning like when we say a man is fully formed, he's got two hands, two legs and a head, that sort of thing. So a fully formed tooth will have a crown and it will have roots to anchor the whole tooth in there. And this is what we all see in the mouth, white or slightly white, yellowish, that sort of thing in our mouths. But if we can sort of dissect it further inwards, outside this yellow shell is dentine. So the outside one is called the enamel. Then the second layer inside is called the dentine. And the inner core is the CPU. Is where our vitality is. That's our pulp. And in there lies the blood vessels, the lymphatics, the cells, and yes, stem cells too. So in a nutshell, this is what anatomy of a tooth is. Three layers, that sort of thing. And this, all of this is anchored down to your jaw by suspension tissues, which are periodontal ligaments, which is why our teeth stay in there.
And you mentioned, of course, two sets of teeth in a lifetime. Are there any key differences between the teeth that we have when we're born and the teeth that we have as adults?
Oh, yes, they do, definitely. In general, when we are smaller, we need to have smaller sets of teeth, others will look weird. And other than the size, the shape, the morphology is also different. I guess when we see somebody smile, a child smiles, and when an adult smiles, the front teeth are basically more or less the same shape. But when we look further backwards, the morphology is different.
And the morphology here, so we're referring to the
shape.
Yes. And of the back sets of teeth.
Back sets of teeth.
Right. Something that I wanted to go into, because this whole topic is about, you know, regeneration, replacing our teeth. In the first place, what is the difference between us and, say, you know, a shark? You know, these creatures that will just replace their teeth throughout their lives.
But that's true. Number one, the difference is we don't eat men, not like sharks. But that's true. We are genetically programmed to have two sets of dentition. But once in the longest while, I've seen one case where a patient has got a third set of dentition when we took an X-ray of this patient. But that's absolutely rare. Probably something went wrong with the genetic program. So unlike sharks, we're not meant to do that.
So those stem cells, that's kind of the main thing that we want to talk about today. What are dental pulp stem cells?
Right. So I guess tying into the title, this is where the fairy is. It brings a lot of hope. Now, stem cells are cells which are not committed. Not committed as in, like, we're not committed to do a particular kind of work. So they have the potential to be able to do the work, basically put. So a stem cell, whether it is stem cell from the bone marrow, which is where it started, or stem cell from the dental tissues, these cells are Multipotent. It has got a few potentials. So multipotent. And it can form different types of cells. It can differentiate. So for example, bone marrow stem cell can be then directed to become a nerve tissue or a fat tissue or a skin tissue, that sort of thing.
Wherever it may be needed.
That's right. So, and then for dental stem cells, which came much later when people got the idea from the bone marrow, that dental stem cells can do the same thing too. So basically, the only difference is this is found in the dental tissues. And even within the dental tissue, we're not talking about only pulp. Not many people know, but when we say stem cells from dental tissues, it can come from the apex of the tooth, which is the root of the tooth. It can come from the dental stem cells of the periodontal ligament. It can come from the pulp of deciduous or milk teeth, or it can come from the pulp of adult teeth. It can come from, but in and around the tooth. Yeah. So this is what we mean when we say dental stem cells.
And when did the interest in dental stem cells originate? Because interest around stem cells for health, you know, is ongoing. It's been
in town for about 30 over years.
Okay. And yes, with dental stem cells as well?
Dental stem cells, I think when they first discovered, it was like in the year 2000.
Okay, so that's really recent.
That's right. So it's like now today, 14 years down the road. So all of that came from the excitement built upon the excitement and success built on the bone marrow stem cells. So the only, one of the biggest difference is, you know, to take bone marrow stem cells, you actually have to get into the bone, which means a little bit of a procedure. But if you're talking about dental tissues, we know it is more accessible. And then within the dental tissues, we think about which area is even more accessible than the rest. So one example is stem cells from exfoliated milk teeth which has come off. You want to throw them away or want to keep it in your pillow, whatever. You can actually utilize what's in the middle of it.
And we've talked, and with the stem cells, you know, this is of interest for us, I guess, in particular for the show today. Are we looking at how it can be used in dental health or overall?
Both.
Okay.
This is where the excitement is. When we talk about dental stem cells, people tend to think, okay, dental for dental. But little be known that actually you can differentiate them into other tissues. So there is still a lot of research going on in this area whereby they found that stem cells from these dental tissues can actually differentiate or you know, become nerve tissues. So the application would then be for neurological disorders, for example, Parkinson's, that sort of thing. So it has the potential. Research is ongoing.
And all this could come from a harvested milk tooth that was already falling out in the first place.
Right. So you know how our milk teeth fall off. You either bring the child, I mean our children, to the dentist and say, look, doctor, this is shaking. Can you pull it out?
Yes.
So you can either pull it out or it falls off by itself. So either way, these are teeth we don't really need anymore in that sense. So people talk about banking these stem cells, dental stem cells, with the hope that like 20, 30 years down the road, we will be able to use it for when it's needed. But again, it's still very research-based right now in the phase of research.
And once you pass that stage of childhood, in adulthood, let's talk about missing teeth. What usually causes that, aside from, I suppose, trauma, injury, that sort of thing?
Trauma, injury, when you have cavities in your teeth and it's beyond repair and you could then want to replace it. Or then we think about what we're saying now. Can we regenerate a new tooth? So basically, we're looking at repair, replacement, or regeneration, to put it in a nutshell. So when we talk about dental stem cells, we're talking about a possibility of regenerating either from your own stem cells or somebody else's stem cell.
Do you find that there is a great loss of quality of life when people lose their teeth?
Oh, definitely, I think. I mean, I haven't, but I would imagine I've seen many patients where they find it very difficult to chew their food. They do not have a base. They, you know, so they kind of lose appetite. They don't look nice as they used to be. So these are the main issues where they lose confidence and then they lose quality of life. They can't eat. They don't want to meet people socially. So yes, in general, yes.
I'm speaking today to Professor Khoo Swan Pik, oral physician. We're discussing how the tooth fairy or the modern adult tooth fairy might lie in dental stem cells. Up next, we look at the possibilities that could exist. Professor Khoo's touched a little bit on it. We'll expand on that on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today, Professor Khoo Swan Pik, oral physician. And we are talking about the modern tooth fairy, dental stem cells. Stem cell research is obviously ongoing. And dental stem cells is something new, you know, Professor Khoo, as you mentioned, in the last 14 years or so. So very briefly, you've said that when someone loses their teeth, some of the options you look at are replacement or regeneration. So before we go on to regeneration, when would you suggest that a patient gets that tooth replaced?
Well, it all depends on the age of the patient, what the patient does. So for example, if a child is having his milk dentition or deciduous teeth, and if he's about to have the eruption of his permanent, time span is not big, the gap isn't big, we don't usually replace it. But if he has lost his teeth earlier than before the next eruption, then we would want to maintain that space. So you either have a space maintainer or do something about it. Because if you lose that space, then it will be very difficult when the next tooth comes out, there will be crowding, that sort of thing. In an adult, if you lose your teeth and we know there's no more dentition which is coming out next, no more teeth, then you want to consider a replacement if it's going to affect your quality of life socially, or if you can't eat or chew your food properly. Or again, we talk about loss of space again. So ideally, patients would want to replace their teeth. And how do you replace them? You either have dentures, as we all know very well. And dentures is something that you can, for everybody's understanding, you can actually use this denture, partial dentures or full dentures. You can remove it. Keep it aside at night and use it again in daytime. So this is something removable. Or you want to replace it with something permanent, meaning it's not removable. Example, a bridge. Okay, so a bridge bridges the gap. So you cement it down. You can't take it out to clean. So you clean underneath, that sort of thing. But all of these are prostheses. It has its advantages, obviously. You bridge the gap, you can eat again, you look nice. But then the disadvantages would be it doesn't give you what your original teeth gives you. So some people, there's also a lifespan to it. And people start to think of something closer to the body, like implants, whether they can have something which is part of your body, they screw something inside the gap. I mean, you need an operation, a procedure, put it in there and build a prosthesis. Again, it's a prosthesis on top of it. But again, by doing that, the patient starts to feel a bit more part of himself because there's some kind of an integration. It's not regeneration from our own stem cells. So when we bring on to regenerative dentistry, we talk about regenerating from your own stem cells, basically.
And theoretically, what would that look like? Would it consist of, what would therapy look like? Would it consist of an injection, or would you be growing the teeth externally and then implanting it back into the body? You know, how would it work?
For dental tissues, if let's say the aim was to grow a tooth, so we would all imagine that we look into the mouth, make a little hole in there, inject into the space some stem cells, and we wait and wait and wait and see if
hope for the best.
Yeah, and we hope that a tooth will start growing, one layer, two layers. But unfortunately, it never ever happens that way. So right now, research has been trying to grow dental tissues. Those three layers I talked to you about, they're trying to grow those layers. Yes, they have been able to grow outside the body. They've been able to grow tooth-like structures. And they've even tried to put molds to it, you know, molds to it and put all these growth factors, whatever, and try to force it into form the shape of a tooth. However, if you look at it microscopically, it does not form those exact original three layers as you hope it would be. So things are still much more complicated than we think it is. So yes, unfortunately, it's not an injection that you can put in. So experiments is still up to animal stage where they try to grow that outside and put into the animal. And then once it's matured, they try to take it out and transplant it into another animal that you grow. So it's very complicated. And then we have cell-based therapy, whereby they think you can just put stem cells inside a body and then it will try to grow the tissue you want. Or it is a scaffold-based therapy, whereby we use a scaffold. There's a lot of bioengineering going on here, where we want an interaction between the scaffold and the cells, and by seeding the stem cells onto the scaffold, and they try to grow the tissue of interest. It doesn't necessarily have to be tooth. Depends on what you're intending to. If it is nerve, we try to grow the nerve. That sort of thing.
For teeth specifically, what cells are required to grow, you know, that perfect three-layered structure you were talking about?
Oh, if we look back at what I said, there are three layers: the enamel, what you see outside, the shell, and then the dentin inside, which is very sensitive, and then you have the pulp, which is your central processing unit, your vitality. So what kind of cells are needed? From the time that we are growing this tooth tissues, when we're in the wombs of our mothers, these cells are already talking to each other and say, okay, you first, lay down this layer first. And when this layer is formed, they will instigate the other tissues to say, now you next. So layer by layer, it is laid down like that. So in experiments with stem cells, they're trying to do that. However, the act hasn't been perfected because to understand how cells talk to each other is very complicated. And not only that, not just the presence of the cells and laying down the other layers, there's this spatial space orientation, which is very difficult to duplicate. You know, you need that space orientation to say within that space, this needs to be forced into orientation.
So, for example, if I have lost one of my teeth and I specifically need that tooth back, we would need, so this is, you know, on the lightest, most surface level,
sure,
we would need a mold of that tooth, right, in order for me to get the same thing back. We can't just assume that the stem cells will be smart enough to...
Not right now, but I believe because of people are understanding the genome, the genetic programming, so the genes will direct the cells to say, now you talk to you first and then you talk to you next. So basically put that way. I think science believe that in time to come, we'll be able to grow within that shape, the mold. Yeah.
And before we look, or rather since those three layers are at this point in time not yet possible, let's look at one of them. In May 2014, a Harvard-led team was the first to demonstrate the ability to use low-power light, essentially lasers, to trigger stem cells inside the body to regenerate tissue, specifically dentin. Could you tell us about this piece of research?
Yes, this is very recent, but I wouldn't say this is very new. They have actually, research, they built on a previous discovery. What they are doing basically is to instigate or to stimulate the existing cells. Oh, there are some stem cells in there to form dentin layers, which is the second layer I was referring to, by using this low-level laser therapy. Yes, low laser light therapy has been able to stimulate cells. If you use anything higher than that, the dose is very important, you kill the cells. So, you know, we talk about, oh, we laser off that disease. But here we use low laser pulse therapy to grow. So what they have done is to give this low pulse laser therapy on cells, and then in about 12 weeks on the tooth, existing tooth which has been injured, and in 12 weeks time they take out this tooth again. Incidentally, this is done on rodents.
Yes.
It's not on humans. So they take it out, they microscopically, they look at it. They have found that there's a little bridge there. In other words, dentin, which is a hard tissue, is formed. But again, they caution, it's dentin-like structures. It is not exactly the same kind of dentin tissue. So yes, this is a struggle I've been trying to tell you before, that many people have been able to find enamel-like structures, dentin-like structures, bone-like structures. But I think nobody has been able to find successfully those three structures looking exactly the same with the same strength in the same orientation as our original tooth. That is the challenge.
And is there any way in which, you know, original maybe isn't the best policy here? Do we really need to have everything exactly as it was, or is it enough to have a pulp-like substance covered by a dentine-like structure and an
enamel?
You
got a very good point here. I've been thinking about it myself. I mean, you're right. I don't think we really need original, but then it has to be an acceptable, functional, you know, strength. Like, for example, they've been able to grow tooth-like structures, and then when they test the bone strength, or the strength of the structure, they still find it lesser than our original. So it goes to show it is still not up to our expectations.
And the research was conducted in mice, as you rightly point out. And, you know, we see a lot of these pieces of research coming out every day. They flood the paper. Someone will say, you know, we've cured cancer.
Sure.
And then you'll read the paper and it's in mice. How long is that process of translating, you know, this research from rats to humans?
Oh, we wish it will be like tomorrow. Unfortunately, I think they will have, like all trials, they will have to do it in the lab. And then they do it on like animals. And if they're convinced, it is convincing enough, they will then bring it to the clinic. So right now, obviously, it is not convincing. I mean, there is no very strong evidence to say that 100 or 100 times that you can produce the results. So therefore, it's going to take some time unless the results are compelling.
So this first came to the fore 14 years ago. Is there a good reason now, you would say, for parents, you know, with young children, to really look at those milk teeth and say, okay, it's time to store this in case, who knows?
Yes, I must say there are a few private companies who are already doing that. But I caution things to look out for. I mean, this is for everybody's consumption. Things to look out for if you are a parent and you want to do that kind of investment, you want to know from the company data. You want to see data that comes from it that your lab, the lab has been able to grow these stem cells, bank it nicely so that in X number of years when you want to use it, it is still alive. We do not want them to say, I don't know what happened in 20 years. I don't know. You've taken my money, but now when I want it, it is not there. And then you also need to know if they've done some studies before, how many, what was the sample? You can't have done it on 5 patients and say, this is the result. You need to have reproducible results many times, that these cells, after growing, regrowing, it can maintain its stemness, meaning it is still as uncommitted, single and happy. If you are committed, meaning you have differentiated into a particular tissue. What good is a nerve tissue when I want a tooth? You know what I mean? So you want to keep that uncommitted status for a long while. So these are the things to look out when before you want to invest in that.
Because it is costly, right?
It is costly, plus it's costly if there's so much hope in there that someday when I get a stroke, I go into my bank, a stem cell bank, and find that, oh, these cells are no good anymore. How did you preserve it for me? So that's the question that we want to caution people. Go with an open eye when you do that.
And in the first place, how is it extracted? You know, so you have this tooth. What do you do with it? Why can't I just store the tooth in my freezer, for example, and hope for the best?
True. Well, if with the intention of doing a banking or research or banking, well, our lab have been doing something like that. So what we do is we get freshly harvested or a tooth which has just dropped out. And because the cells are still alive, there's some cells which are alive, quickly, within 24 hours, we want to rush it to the lab. And I'll have to sort out, the lab will have to dig out with a special sterile, totally sterile instrument, take it out and straight away transfer it into a medium. And then the medium will grow. We don't want one cell. We want many cells. So we want to grow cells out of it. So all that has to be done in a very controlled environment. So how do parents know? Right now, I think there's no need to actually rush to anywhere to do it until more results are, where there's more convincing evidence that a particular lab is able to reproduce their laboratory results for you or for us to bank with them.
Yeah, because the issue here is storage, right?
That's
so much what can happen in 20 or 30 years, because I think it can be very easy to hope that, in however many decades, technology will have caught up. But as is, technology may not be good enough for storage. Is that safe to say?
That's true. So if you can't store properly, don't even hope that it's going to differentiate into whatever. So the storage, we do have, like now when we've stopped our initial research before going to the next phase, we're just storing ourselves under minus degrees in the freezer, cryopreserve, we call it, cryo-freezing, yes.
What is the difference between adult and infant stem cells?
Adult and baby stem cells, maybe. Basically, we're talking about dental stem cells, let's say. We have the stem cells from deciduous teeth. We've got stem cells from adult teeth, which have been pulled out. For example, wisdom teeth, they are also, but these are adult stem cells. Yes, studies have shown there are differences in them. For example, from an adult dentition, adult stem cells, the doubling time isn't as great as infant ones. And the ability to do certain things are different. So, for example, a baby, exfoliated teeth, the stem cells from that are able to have better osteoinductive, meaning it is better at growing bone than in an adult teeth. So it depends on what you want. You want to use the right source. It's not wrong, but you have better results with if you want to do that. But for a nerve, for example, if you want to grow a nerve, a milk teeth may be better. So literature will show you which is good for what purpose.
So I suppose theoretically, because we always have our adult teeth, I mean, provided we take reasonable care of them. So if you want insurance, I suppose, then saving your baby stem cells are, what you're after. Is that fair?
It is fair, but depending on how would you save it. If, like me, you just take it, this is nice, this is a nice memento, and put it in your locker, it will die. There will be nothing more than just a shell after a while. So yes, now I think people will look at that exfoliated tooth and extracted tooth with a bit of sympathy or regret there, and saying, what should I do with this? This is valuable. It is very valuable. But until you find a credible source of storage, you don't want to rush into it and pay money.
So in a way, we're looking at the future here, right? Stem cells really do represent in many ways the future of medicine. So what message would you like to leave us with then on dental stem cells having so much potential? What do we need to understand about it now?
I guess at this point in time in 2014, everybody will probably want to contribute to the advancement of science for a better future. It doesn't necessarily have to be for ourselves directly. So if we can contribute these to stem cell research, as in contributing those teeth, and we'll have a better, faster understanding of this and a better turnover of results. So yes, help us to move forward.
Thank you very much, Professor
Koo. Thank you.
I've been speaking to Professor Koo Swanpik, oral physician, about the modern tooth fairy, dental stem cells, and the potential that they could hold for our medical future on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.